Today, we are going to be talking about building accountability. And this is something that is, everybody has accountability in different ways, or we are accountable to different people in different ways. If I think back to my, excuse me, if I think back to my journey, which had, you know, I consider my career kind of having two different chapters, the first 10 years and now the last five-ish years or so, the person that I was prior to Limitless is, we've already had the memorial, we've said our piece, but he is dead, right? That version of Adam is long gone. And I really don't ever really care to revisit that version of who I was as an advisor or what the business was looking at. That doesn't mean to say that everything is completely fixed and that everything is a well-oiled machine. There are certainly different issues and problems and challenges that the business faces right now, but those are what we call high quality problems to have. The ones that I had for the first 10 years or so were just, for lack of a better word, pain in the ass problems. The common denominator there was that I couldn't get out of my own way. But with that being said, one of the keystone factors that has to be in place if we want any type of growth to happen is we must figure out what type of systems, people, and processes we can have in place to hold us accountable. Because there is a very, very, very distinct difference between wanting something and being willing to do the things necessary to get the output that we all want to have. All of us on here have an idea of, you're all here for a certain reason, right? This comes back to the big why, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. You're all here for some reason or another. There was some motivating factor. There was some capitulation point that happened in your personal and or professional life that says, all right, enough's enough. And I remember in the first year, there was an advisor who was saying, all right, if you tell me to wear purple underwear and a pink jumpsuit to a client meeting, because that's what you do and that's what brings in tens of millions of dollars, I don't care. I will wear purple underwear and a pink jumpsuit. Like, that's the level of commitment that I had at that time, because I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I knew that I had to hold myself accountable, both internally with myself, as well as, right, what's the, who wrote the book? Baumeister. I can't think of his first name. Willpower. It was Carolyn Dweck and Baumeister, I believe, are the two authors that kind of published a seminal paper in the late 70s, maybe early 80s, I think it was. Don't quote me on those dates. Basically affirming and quantifying to us in research and like peer-reviewed journals that willpower is not enough, that we can't just say that, oh, we want these things to happen and then they magically happen. Willpower is not enough. So we need to have systems and people in place in order to help hold ourselves accountable. And so that's what we want to spend some time talking about here today. We will spend some time going back. And this is, again, we spend so much time in the first part of this, in the first part of the coaching program, talking about why we focus on clarifying the vision, because it's not if, it's what, and it's how many different times and what types of resistance you are going to face when you're going through this. Because if you want something you've never had before, which is the vision of the practice that you want to have and the benefits to your clients, to yourself, to your team, to your family, right? All of those benefits, if we want something that we've never had before, we must be prepared to do things that we have never done before. Because, right, if otherwise things would just happen and that wouldn't make sense, right? We couldn't just keep doing the same things that we are doing and expecting different results, right? We all know that phrase, or I'm assuming we all know that phrase, which is the definition of insanity. Or as I learned from Steph back in 2018, the Einsteinian, is that a word? It is now. The Einsteinian approach or a twist on that is no problem can be solved with the same consciousness that created it. So we first must figure out what vision do we have. And then we go through and figure out, okay, based off of all the different levers that we can pull in a practice, which combination of letters and what combination of levers and in what chronological order are going to allow me / my practice to get from where it is right now to the vision of what I want it to turn into. And little side note here, it's okay if that vision changes. The vision that I had for year one, year two, you know, Adam year one, year two, Adam 2018 to 2019, that vision is very, very different than what it is right now. So you have to give yourself permission for that vision to change, but you have to have a vision. And then it's about, okay, well, what do we need to do to create the positive mindset and habits that are going to support us through that so that when we are tested with resilience, or excuse me, when we are tested with resistance, we have the resilience to push through that, ground ourselves in the vision of what we had for the business, and then ask ourselves that question of, all right, well, who and or what do I need to lean into? The who can be the support structure of Limitless, coaching calls, friendships, and collaborative relationships that you have with the members in Limitless, and the systems that you have in place, your daily devotionals, your morning routines, your, I was just talking with in my cohort, the coaching cohort that I'm that I'm covering for a handful of advisors that have enrolled in that on last Monday's call. One of the advisors had a great win. Jeremy had a great example of sticking to his vision and basically having this conversation with a client that says, well, this is the way it's going to be going forward. And it's either step up or step out, not in those exact words, but that's the point. And so my question to him was, okay, where are you going to put that? What I mean by that is you need to have some type of, I have a wins notebook. When I was going through all these changes in Evernote, as I would get these little success nuggets, I would drop them in my Evernote called a wins notebook. Because when we have these resistance points that we're going to feel, as we make these changes into our business, I knew myself well enough to say that I need to go back to the well. I need to have something that I can go back to kind of pick myself up when I get punched in the face a little bit, right? That famous Mike Tyson quote, everybody has a plan until we get punched in the face. The Limitless version of getting punched in the face is clients asking to compromise on our fee schedule, clients asking to compromise on our service model, picking up the phone and dialing for dollars and calling prospects and getting 25 no's in a row, or producing podcasts for weeks, months on end without a single, like all of those pieces of resistance are going to come in. We need to have something to go back to the well to. And then when we do create those positive mindsets and habits, then it's about, okay, well, how do we keep that in a repeatable and sustainable process? How do we systematize that to be able to allow us to easily go back to that when, again, we're faced with that growth? So that's why we spend so much time in the beginning of Limitless continuing to come back to these points, because in all different aspects of, as we get tactical, if you will, in Limitless, as we move through the year, as we start really diving in on your service model and your fee structure and your how you structure your client meetings, and as we lean into growth and we talk about top, middle, and bottom of funnel activities, all of that will share in some aspect. It'll come back to the vision. It'll come back to your habits. It'll come back to your system. So that's why we really pound this home during a lot of these calls in the beginning of the year, because again, they're the common denominator from a strategic standpoint as we get more tactical in a lot of what we're going to talk about here.
Yeah, I think, Adam, the conversation around wins is a big one, right? Because accountability and showing up is, it's hard work and we need those motivators. So I'm curious, anyone in the room who's been digging in and working hard and meeting resistance, can you share a big win that you've had with us?
Nobody. We're all failing miserably.
Oh. It's that groupthink conversation. Come on, be the first person to speak up. You got this.
I'll jump in if nobody else will.
Yeah, go ahead.
Jump in.
Big win. So had a pretty big ideal, one of my top clients, ideal client situation-wise and everything, that we were just really grinding through a lot of work for them and wanted to buy a house. And there was just a lot of coordination between mortgage broker, accountant on kind of where to pull, what company to pull this funds from, how do we fund it. It was supposed to be a downsize, turned into a $600,000 upgrade, as they typically do. And it was just a lot of work and it kind of really threw my schedule for a loop. But when we came through it, just the feedback I got, the client was so over the moon thrilled, and we really nailed down their kind of their clarity on their financial purpose, about living in their wealth and not just seeing it grow on a piece of paper. And so that was a huge win for me to see, like, when you do things the way we want to do them in terms of like really quarterbacking everything, every professional, like do that service model that we want to implement with everyone. You know, this is the benefit, and this is kind of what clients get out of it, which again seemingly seems like a normal process, like buying and selling a house. But you can turn that into from like an incredible client experience to a life-changing event, just with a different mindset and a different approach to it. And so that's life-changing for this client. And that's something that I keep kind of top of mind for me is a big one.
It's a reminder that the work that we do, hey, it actually matters, right?
Yeah. Well, it's not so interesting because some of what you have done for this client, we're talk about doing for yourselves, right? Clarifying your vision, getting clear on the mindsets that you need to kind of get there and execute. And that's really where we're going to dive in next is to get those results that you want. It's one thing to have clarity, it's another to show up and consistently do the work and have the people and systems in place, but more importantly, just connecting with yourself. So as we look back at this sort of first quarter, all the things that we focused on, clarifying your vision, getting really crystal clear on why you're showing up. Look, you guys are smart, intelligent people. You could go anywhere and do anything and probably be successful. But why have you chosen to do the work that you're doing, right? And then how am I going to execute on that purpose and that mission and that vision? What does it actually look like for my business that's different from someone else's, right? Adam, why did you pick working with ODs, right? Because it was important to you. It meant something. It mattered, right? And then how do you structure it so that you can do really good work? What's the business plan to get there, right? Creating those pieces, right? But then how do we show up every day? What's our daily practices? What's our email processes? How do we really, really show up? And this last part that we're going to dive in today, which is how do we create accountability systems, not so that we're only accountable by external factors, because that's what most of the world relies on. And that's why most of the world fails. You can't just be accountable to your clients or to other people. Because it's not enough to do the in the weeds day-to-day work. You have to learn how and get better at being accountable to yourself. How do you decide to show up and do the work every day? And so that's kind of what we're going to dig into today is how to create a system and structure for accountability so that you can be accountable to yourself and put those processes and people in place.
So I, in true Adam fashion, I probably said a lot of what I should have said on this slide maybe about 4 minutes ago. So I don't know that I'm going to spend a whole lot of time right here to continue with what Natalie mentioned, right? You have to have some type of platform in place. If any of you have, it's on our reading list. I think it's up like on the first the first reading list that you get from us. One of those seminal books that we recommend is Atomic Habits. Those of you that have read it know what I'm talking about. Those of you that have not read it, I would again challenge you to put that at or towards the top of the list to go back and look at, because the thesis, if you will, or the idea from that book that James talks about is that we don't rise to our goals, we fall to the level of our systems. And one of the systems that we have to put in place is what is the way in which we're going to hold ourselves accountable to our business. Peter Drucker, a longtime management consultant for, gosh, I think he started out at IBM and then kind of made his way through a lot of the big companies that we would recognize here today, wrote, I think, probably close to a dozen books on leadership and management, but for bigger companies, but the principles apply at the smaller level as well. One of my favorite quotes from him is, what gets measured gets managed, and what gets managed improves. And so if I were to ask all of you, and this ties into that philosophical approach also ties very well into the teachings from Traction with Gino Wickman, which is this idea of what are the rocks that you're going to put in place? What are the non-negotiable items, the non-negotiable projects, the non-negotiable changes that you're going to impose on your practice over X period of time, monthly, weekly, quarterly, annual, right? to improve, to get us from where we are to where we are to where we want to be. And how do we keep those in front of us? So one of the ways in which we want to do that is by having our practice KPIs. Now, we talked about practice KPIs in our very first session back in, our first virtual retreat when we kicked off the program in early January. The key performance indicators of a practice, we certainly want to make sure that that we're tracking quantitatively the result based off the inputs. This is why I love financials, not the financial planning side of things, but financials from a business standpoint, because they're unemotional and they don't lie. And one of the things that I talk to our OD clients about, or that I talk about and then coach John and Kate to talk about with our clients that we serve, is there is a very big difference between reading and comprehending our numbers. I can pick up, to use this metaphor, I can pick up something written in Spanish, okay? And I can read it. I don't comprehend it. So I can read my financial statements. I can read my profit loss and my balance sheet and my statement of cash flow. And I can look at my production numbers and I can pull up Orion and I can look at my AUM and what my inflow and outflows are. Like, pick whatever KPIs that you as an advisor have deemed to be necessary to improve, which again, going back to what I talked about, go back to your big why. What is it that needs to change in your practice, or what combination of things need to change to get you to the place of from where you're at to where you want to be? And what KPIs are you going to consistently measure? So again, we could create all kinds of different KPIs. One of those is the key performance, this KPI dashboard, if you will, that just kind of gives you that cross-section of what a normal advisory practice looks like. We have revenue that comes in, we have expenses that go out. We as business owners have what's left. And I don't even like using that word, what's left, because we teach and we're very big on intentional practice ownership and want to make sure that, okay, we're setting up the business from a profitability first, to use Mike Michalowicz and his book, The Profit First, aptly named. Translation, what type of profit margin are we targeting? And we're going to talk more about this in the virtual retreat, or in the, we're going to get into a little bit more detail in next week's virtual summit, as we talk through just kind of what that, how we track. I talk with business owners about your profit loss statement being a game of Plinko, right? You drop a dollar in and every line or every bump that it hits on the way down is an expense in the business. And we essentially get what's left, but we want to manage from the bottom and get on the way up. So this is one example of how we would use KPIs of revenue that we're bringing in. We would be tracking our expenses. We would translate that into what does our revenue per client need to be. We then take that into consideration based off of the number of hours that we plan on working and dedicating to client service in our firm. And we're saying, okay, well, how many clients can I serve based off of the amount of time that I'm going to allocate to direct client service? When we do that math, we realize that we can serve 100 clients. There's a firm in Indianapolis here, I know a couple of advisors at, where they're, with the amount of time that they dedicate to each client relationship, each lead advisor only works with 45 households. There is no magic number. There is, I know 100 is the round number that gets thrown out. My point is, you have the agency. We're giving you that agency and permission to craft your business intentionally on paper, on purpose first, and then build the systems and fee schedules and service models around that. This is one example, again, where we can build a KPI dashboard, which is, again, very quantitative as it pertains to revenue per client. But again, you can craft this however you want based off the other thing that that's not directly on here, but I would say all of us want to track as a KPI are the number of out of office days that we have. That's why we spend time with the calendar. So taking time off first and putting that on the calendar first, and then building the business around that is another good forcing mechanism back to the systems and accountability. If it's on, if, you know, show me your calendar, show me your checkbook, and I'll show you your priorities. If you are putting those constraints around the amount of time that you're going to spend in the business, starting with your time out, it's now your job to reconcile what time is left with this spreadsheet here. So, Natalie, anything that you would add on top of that to complement this worksheet or what I've shared already?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that I love data so much is it tells a story and it doesn't lie, right? So when you're running these numbers consistently, it's a way to hold yourself accountable. I remember a client I had probably 10 or 15 years ago, and we did the practice benchmarking on a monthly basis. which is a lot, because he was trying to grow, but he was really struggling to adhere to minimums. He just really he loved everyone. He was a great person, like just wanted to help anyone that he could. But we come to the realization is that, like, look, you're not a nonprofit business. If you want to be a nonprofit, go start one. Otherwise, you are in this business to do good and to make money, which means we have to put some boundaries in place. And so every time we pulled this up and we saw the numbers consistently go down for 6 months, we had the conversation, hey, what's going on behind the scenes, right? Let's take a peek under the hood. Oh, I negotiated that fee. Oh, I negotiated that fee, right? And what happened was through that, through having that conversation on a regular basis, through looking at the numbers, he started to become more aware of what was actually happening, right? The same way we talk about being aware of your mindset, how your thoughts impact your actions, this is a way for you to kind of look at where you're making changes that you might not necessarily see and have them sort of show up in your face, right? And after about 6 months of that, he was like, okay, whoa, whoa, we can't do this. We can't do this anymore, right? This is, you know, the cost of this was the high a hire for a new person, someone to leverage his time more. So, you know, data is not always the most fun thing, but it tells a story. It's going to help you hold yourself accountable. And so deciding what it is that you want to track and how you want to track it is really important and critical. Laura had a great question, which is, well, do I share this with my team? And I think it depends on your firm and your comfort level with transparency. I am a big fan of transparency because guess what? Your team can't help you. They can't support you. They can't impact the numbers if they don't have awareness of the numbers or what's going on behind the scenes. So if you're at the point where you feel uncomfortable about the paycheck that you're writing yourself and you can't show your team the numbers, there's a whole nother conversation that we need to have. But I review this with my team, goals, revenue, quarterly and an annual basis, like at the beginning of the year when we set the vision, we set the metrics, and then we share them on a consistent basis. Where are we? What can we shift? What can we change? Jenny just came to me and is like, I don't think we need this software. There's one over here that does this and two other things. Like, I think that that would help us meet our expense goal. Can we do that? Yes, absolutely. So I think it's not just about you, but being able to share this with your team helps create accountability for them as well.
Oops, fat fingered that. There we
Too
go.
many things. My other favorite accountability tool, as simple as it sounds, is the Success Shifter. If you guys are not using this yet, you need to. So here's why. It's a piece of paper, and I know that some of you love your technology, and if you're really consistent and amazing with your tech or your habit tracker tools, I'm not going to tell you not to use them like Streak or any of those. But for most of us, our phones are just another distraction. I pick up my phone, I get my habit tracker. Oh, next thing I know, right? I'm on social media, I'm doing something else. There's also a ton of research that says, like, if it's in your face, you can't ignore it, right? If I have my piece of paper that's sitting on my desk every day and I sit down, it's staring me in the face, right? And if I see those numbers every day staring me in the face, I cannot ignore the fact that I'm supposed to be on LinkedIn for 30 minutes every day to grow my business. And yet I'm not doing it, right? It creates that layer of accountability. There's also a ton of research that shows that actually writing down your goals or the things that you're tracking on paper is more tangible and translates more to retention than something like typing or using an app. So when we talk about the Success Shifter, those are all the reasons that we want you to use the paper version. But if you're like, I'm a techie, I need an app. There's a ton of them. Ask me what they are. I can go with that. But it's really, this is about consistently reinforcing your habits every single day. The one thing that I see a lot of people do here, and we're going to open it up for people to kind of share their feedback, is putting too much down, right? Like, I've got a list of 47 things that I'm working on a daily basis to make changes. Most of the time, when you do that, you're more than likely to make no progress at all. So as you look at your success chapter, be really clear about what are the one or two things that are going to move the needle for me in each of these areas. When those are consistent and become a habit, you can take them off the success shifter and put on something new, right? When I don't put on my success shifter, brush my teeth every day, right? My kids' version of a success shifter, I put on there, brush your teeth every day, because if I don't ingrain that habit for them, right, it's not going to show up consistently. And we know that it takes at least 66 for some people more to create and ingrain that habit. So I'd love to hear from someone who was like, I don't want to use the success shifter, who has decided that they were going to do it. And how's that gone for you? Anyone meet resistance with it and feel a change of heart?
This is again where the engagement
I know, they're
happens.
so
And
quiet
I'll
today.
talk about
Guys,
it a little
it's
bit.
close.
They're like,
I've been
Stephanie's
using
not here. We can get away with it.
I know,
Nope,
classic
not
Zoom call. You go from
happening.
nobody talking to now there's like four people that want to talk, and then it's the back and forth. So,
I've been using my success shifter monthly for over 13, 14 months now. Love it. Great idea.
awesome. Clark, can you talk a little bit about the, to Natalie's point, it cannot be overstated the importance of not overwhelming yourself. Can you talk a little bit about your journey with it? Did you start with just like, hey, let me just get good at three things first and then compound on top of that?
Like most people, I ripped off and deployed directly from the Limitless website and used most of the existing stuff that was on there between, fitness, sleep. There was professional goals, personal goals, pipeline goals. I've noticed that I've hung on to pretty well the health and fitness, sleep stuff, as well as the personal goals of like meditation and half days and but it's like, to Natalie's point, it's right here on my desk every day. I print off a new one at the beginning of each month. There's a number of things on here that I wish I did a better job tracking. Like I've got, read 20 minutes per day. I feel like that is something that, for the first 6 months of Limitless last year, I was sticking to really well and haven't done very well with in the last few months. I love my kids, and I spend a lot of time with them, and this career affords us that. But I have here like book time with kids 4 times a month, and yet I don't find myself checking that box off for some reason as much as I should. But otherwise, it's been really helpful just to keep things front of mind.
Yeah, I think that's a really great example, Clark, of where this can also show where we meet resistance. And we're not going to get it today, but that's a place to look. What has me resisting these two things? What has me not showing up and scheduling time with my kids? What has me not spending the time reading and like really being able to look at it, not just from what I'm being successful at and creating good habits for, but what's behind the places that I see resistance? And sometimes it's like, look, I get enough time with my kids. I don't really need to do that extra thing. And so I need to take it off the list. Like, let's not have something on our list that we don't need to do, right? That's the, hey, I brush my teeth. I get it. I'm good. But sometimes it tells us, hey, that's something that I need to be working on, right? For me, like, it's that LinkedIn thing, like getting on, I'm like, oh, like, I had to completely shift my mindset around how I show up in the world of social media to get comfortable with it, because the resistance had nothing to do with finding the 30 minutes. The resistance had to do with showing up and having my voice heard in the world, right? So it allows us to take a deeper dive and see, a peek behind the scenes of what's really going on.
And
I think
to
the
no
interesting.
surprise, I
Go ahead,
like to
Clark.
work out, I like to sleep, I like to meditate, and those boxes are checked almost every day. But the and that has an effect on life and business, but some of the others, am I prospecting? Am I only checking email twice a day? That's not getting as checked as frequently as the others.
All right. Well, what are you going to take away from this conversation, Clark? What's your next best step?
The success shifter in particular.
or is it just working really well? There really isn't a change that's
Yeah,
needed.
well, I mean, I was gonna say in a lot of ways things are going really well, but I mean, definitely on the personal side of things and even some of the professional components, like the checking email twice a day. And that's something that I just made a note of about creating positive habits. Like I still have the email up on the left screen, Adam.
Oh, don't do it
And
to me, Clark. Come
as
on,
efficient
man.
as our lives can be these days with virtual, with virtual meetings, like it's I'm still looking at it. And thankfully, I don't get a lot of emails these days, which is a good thing, but I'm still looking at it. I don't need to. So that's something I should
You're
just
still
turn off.
just, let me tie one off here, just kind of put it around and.
Yeah. But well, so sometimes we need systems to support us because the habit is so ingrained. So for those of you who are sucked into email, most of us are, we all have that bad habit. My recommendation is a tech. There's an app called Freedom. It essentially locks you out of all of the things that are distractions so that you can't do that. So I use it when I'm doing deep work time or when I'm working on specific tasks. It was built for college students because apparently college students are the most distractable people on the planet.
Shocker.
Yeah.
How could that possibly be when they've grown up with technology that is meant to sap all of their attention away from everything else that actually matters? Well, that is
Correct.
shocking, Natalie.
I know, so shocking. But Clark, here's what I want to ask of you. I want you to find someone else in this room, and I want you to pull them as your accountability partner. Hey, I'm only going to check email twice a day. I'm not going to put this in place, right? This is a conversation around accountability. So, what's it going to take for you to hold yourself accountable to doing the work that you just said, which is, I'm kind of still bad at email and I still need to work on it. All right, Adam, let's keep going.
See, my mind was also going to what's the penalty if you actually don't do that? What's the extreme accountability? What's the check that you're going to write? What's the embarrassing moment that you're going to have to publish for all of us at Limitless to see if you break that commitment? But I'll let you determine if and to what extent you want to tack that onto the initiative.
You can have a whole conversation on my feelings on that.
Well, and Clark hit on this a little bit, right? The daily practice, the success shifter is meant to be there to support the daily practice of whatever it is that you're going to do to start your day. He mentioned that he enjoys fitness. I'm also enjoying that. I'm actually shifting up what I was doing for fitness because candidly, I just got really, really bored with running after basically running my entire life. So I'm changing. I'm embracing a different type of exercise and actually spending a little bit more time at the gym. And it's actually really, really enjoyable. But my point with that is find something. I can't remember the quote, or I remember the quote. I don't know who it's attributed to, but it's something along the lines of the first hour of your morning is the rudder to your day. And how you start each day can have a significant impact and will pay dividends throughout that day. This is one of the reasons why I cannot stand to read the news. I don't read the news. My dad and I were just having this conversation over the weekend because my dad came down to visit. He was like, "So what do you think is going to happen to this whole Ukraine-Russia thing?" And I would just look at him and was like, "I have no clue because I'm about as uninformed with that as you could possibly be." And I feel a little bit challenged in that because it's like, okay, on one hand, I should be an informed citizen. But on the other hand, to what we're talking about here, it's not something that is going to directly impact the result and the positive impact that I can have on those in my life. And so, what are the things that I can do that I can introduce into my morning, into my routine, that can reduce my stress and anxiety, that can improve my mental well-being, that can include or enhance my clarity and decision making? So everybody has their own version of this. Hal Elrod wrote this book, The Miracle Morning. You don't have to do everything that is in the Savers worksheet there, which you can see if you can zoom in. It stands for silence, affirmations, visualizations, reading, or excuse me, silence or meditation, affirmations, visualizations, exercise, reading, and then scribing or writing. There's all kinds of different versions of that. My point is to what we've talked about, to what Natalie mentioned with the success shifter, use that as the foundation, as the scaffolding in which you can build your morning routines. It doesn't mean that you have to wake up at 4 in the morning. I know that's what Hal and the team at Miracle Morning, and there's a Facebook group and all these other communities that you can join around Miracle Morning, where some of it is, dare I say, that success porn of, I get up at 3:30 in the morning for my Miracle Morning. It's like, go you. You know what? I'll see you at 8:30. I figure out what works for you, build that momentum, know yourself, and right, what's the best, kind of like what we talk about with clients with an investment strategy. The best investment strategy is one that you can stick with. The best morning routine is the one that you can stick with. Now, if you have to move it up early, Hal has whole type of systems where you can start at 7 and then start moving it back to get more and more power, whatever that time is. But my point with this is start somewhere and build consistency. Oftentimes, and Clark mentioned this when he was talking about, this business allows us the freedom and the flexibility to spend time with our kids and go for walks with our spouse at 1 o'clock in the afternoon if we have a break in between appointments or whatever that might be. The interesting thing about that, though, is that if we take that to the extreme, we actually lose all structure. And now we actually introduce more stress into our life, which, like, paradoxically is the one thing that we thought we were solving for by having that flexibility. Jocko Willink on or the author of Extreme Leadership talks about in his course the or in, he talks about a lot in his podcast this idea that the more disciplined you are, the more freedom you actually end up having. And this is one example of having discipline in your life and starting out as early or starting out your day the right way. Oops. Anybody want to share any success stories that they have about starting their morning routine? Have you anybody embraced the true Miracle Morning approach, or have you created or customized your own personal version of that? Anybody want to share anything that's worked for them?
I'll share. This is Eric Walters.
Eric.
Hey, one of the ways I used the success shifter was around mindsets. And so I didn't adopt everything in the Miracle Morning, but affirmations, kind of personal prayer, reading, stuff like that. That was for me a really meaningful way to use the shifter. I know we're focused on, kind of the more business applications, but for me to get my head right was a huge positive move for the success shifter.
Very cool. Very cool. Thanks for sharing, man. Appreciate that.
And I have that we I actually started doing it after Limitless started. So before you guys even mentioned it, I work with a personal coach to help me implement what we're doing here. And she does a she actually did a class. So she did it, and they say it takes a month to really implement a habit. So we would it was a month long class where you would tackle one part of the Miracle Morning so that you were layering. And it was so helpful because you could read the book, you can have all these tools, but I think the accountability of having other individuals keeping you accountable and what worked for you, what didn't, and kind of tweaking along the way was so helpful. And I've stuck with it ever since. It's
Good for you,
been
Julie.
totally changed my mornings. People have noticed, I mean, even my husband's noticed that like your outlook changes, you're more productive, and it's really been beneficial.
Yeah, I think the trick there is really making sure that it works for you. Everyone is different here, right? I'm not a you have to wake up at 5 a.m. every day kind of person. I wake up between 6:30 and 7. I get up with my kids. Most people don't recommend that or do that, but I get up with my kids. We have breakfast, we get ready for school, we drive them to school together. I come back and then I have my own hour where I do my yoga, I do my journaling, I set my day and my intentions, and then I have my meeting with my team and then I get ready. Right? I like to stay up a little bit later. So I'm not waking up before 4 o'clock in the morning. Never have, never will, don't want to. But I do have a routine and a structure that works for me. So, right, I had to start with 2 minutes. Like that's what it took. Like, okay, I'm gonna do 2 minutes of this one thing every single day, right? Start small. If you're not sure if you can do it, pick one thing, do that. And then to your point, layer, add the next thing, add the next thing, get on and do that.
Yeah, I'm just, well, you know what? I was going to type it out. I'll just say it. there's a reason that the subtitle of Atomic Habits is, I think it is Tiny Improvements, Remarkable Results. It doesn't mean printing off the success shifter and putting 23 items on there and trying to accomplish the perfect streak for all 23 right out of the gate. I mean, dare I say, nothing could possibly set you up for failure more than trying to do something like that. The other side of that, that can be harder for some people, myself, I'm putting myself in this category, is believing in the system enough to know that consistency compounds. And I struggle with the idea of, Natalie, I don't get out of bed unless it's for more than 2 minutes. Like I can't justify success being, hey, let me just start with 2 minutes. Like for me, I'm admitting, like, this is my problem. This is the way my mind works. I have to recognize that. I have to catch how I'm interpreting that and then reframe it and say, no, this is how habits build. This is how consistency compounds, is it starts with something relatively easy, like 2 minutes, and then it goes to three, and then it goes to five, or whatever you are measuring to success, right? It doesn't mean that you have to pound all the savers right out of the way every single morning from the time that you start. How about we just start with affirmations and visualizations? And then maybe we ease into meditating for a 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, and ease into that. That is my, I have to catch myself on that, to what John Assaraf talks about in Inner Size when we talk about neuroplasticity, which is the AIA, being aware of how I'm thinking about something. All right, well, what is my intention? Well, my intention is to fill in the blank. So what action am I going to take as a result of that? If we just blindly go through that and don't catch how we're, you know, thinking about our thinking, that's where progress kind of gets stumped, or just,
yeah,
we hurt ourselves even before we begin.
Yeah. So. Well, and again, I think it goes back to knowing yourself well enough, right? If you're the kind of person who's like, hey, I'm going to do the hour and that works for me, and I'm an all in, or, you know, all or nothing person, great, right? Lean into who you are and how you show up best. But those are, I think, some of the, as we talk about this, what are some of the tips and tricks that we have, right? So stacking is another one, right? Pick the habit that you want to build and stack it on top of something you already do every day. So I just got a walking pad. I have my meetings with my team. Guess what I'm going to be doing going forward? Like, anytime I'm on a meeting with the team, I'm going to be on that walking pad. Because frankly, like, I've noticed sitting at a desk every day, I don't feel great doing it, right? It's not, you know, helping me get to where I want to go. So now I've got to create some habits and actions that show up consistently to get me there. So you can all hold me accountable, check in, see if I've been doing my walking pad with the team. Someday I'll get to doing them on these calls, but I'm afraid I'll fall on my face in the middle of a webinar. So we're not going to do that. But we are going to talk about this month's homework assignments, our March assignments. For those of you who have resistance to homework, they're just assignments. Do them. They're going to help you, I promise. Right. Number one is your success shifter. If you're not already doing that, just trust me, try it for a week. Print it out, pick two things, put it on your desk, do it for a week, then tell me I'm wrong. The second is the KPI worksheet. If you're not measuring the performance indicators of your business, then you're not running a business. This is what separates, I want to say the men from the boys, but I feel like I can't say that anymore.
Accidental versus purposeful.
Yeah, accidental versus purposeful. For me, it's about, so many people start businesses and they're entrepreneurs and they're sort of just showing up and they get what comes after. These are the kinds of things that shift you from accidental entrepreneur to on-purpose business owner. These are the things that you see larger organizations doing. Can you imagine running a Fortune 500 company without looking at your numbers and your metrics? Can you imagine running a business without knowing what your profit margin is or what your client base looks like or how profitable it is? Absolutely not, right? So sometimes we tell ourselves, hey, it's just me. I'm a, you know, a solo practitioner, or we're a small office. Like, I don't know if we really need to do those things. If you want to grow and scale a successful business, yes, you need to do them. And number three, set up a daily practice, read the Miracle Morning, pick a couple of things to do to start your intention for the day. So three simple, not super time consuming, no excuses, homework assignments. Y'all jazzed up? Woo-woo! Look at
that. The only tweak that I would say on the success shifter, and this is, it know yourself. And Natalie touched on this earlier. Again, I am also a believer in paper. There's something different that happens when we are actually writing something down or checking something off, as opposed to just tapping something on a screen. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just me. I don't think it is, but there is something different. If you are one that has travel, either for work and or personal side, it's one more thing to have to pack. That's why I love my James Clear notebook. And I just actually finished this one, so I keep both of mine because I'm transitioning from one to the other. So I love bringing my journal with me, my James Clear journal with me, because again, everything is right there in the journal, including the version of the success shifter. So back to what Natalie had mentioned, find what works for you, build, introduce these systems into the flow of your existing life. Try and reduce the amount of resistance points that you're going to have for these systems. Give yourself every angle to win rather than just swimming upstream on multiple different levels. All right. Any questions thus far before we shift into breakouts? Bueller. All right. So what we're going to do is we are going to be, let's see, Natalie, what time we're going here until the bottom. We have 90 minutes for today's call, correct?
Yep.
Okay.
But technical questions are, Allison, I'm really bad at math in my head.
So we have
correct
40 minutes left.
40 minutes.
39 minutes, according to my clock right now. So why don't we do this, Natalie? Allison, if we can say 20 minutes, do 20 minutes for breakouts and then 20 minutes for Q&A, that should wrap us up to be any type of Q&A or follow-up.
Okay, yeah, that sounds great. And
so we're going to
turn those up.
Yep. While Allison's setting up those groups, again, all we want you to do is have that discussion, create some, and with this, if you're with the group that you have, there is nothing stopping you from introducing some peer-to-peer accountability and saying, okay, here's where I'm struggling. Here's the resistance points that I'm feeling right now. How can I hold myself accountable, or can they help hold you accountable? I know there are people that do these buddy systems to start Miracle Morning. Hey, it's a quick text every morning, a picture of the watch to show, hey, I'm up, I'm doing my thing. There's all kinds of different examples of that. If you want to do that, the groups that we're going to break you out into could be a great opportunity to create that additional external accountability system outside of what we're doing here. Welcome back. Well, no point in me sharing the last slide because it just says Q&A and discussion. So there's really nothing. It's better to look at bigger tiles of people than it is to look at a screen that just says Q&A. So hopefully that was a good discussion. Any points of feedback, questions, or success stories that anybody wants to share based off either the part that we presented on prior, or that we presented, that we talked about earlier, or discussions from your small groups?
They're still coming back at them. So
I guess they are. Oh, sorry.
Give a minute. Wow. Gotta get that.
You gotta repeat yourself now,
Adam. I have to repeat myself.
Yeah. Or we could just do this. Who was in the middle of an amazing conversation and just got cut off and they have to finish and they want to share with the group?
That's a much more condensed way of saying it, Natalie. Thank you for saving that. Saving me.
You're good. It happens to me every time, every single time. I'm like on an epiphany moment and I get
in a breakout. Yeah. You see the clock going, like, you have 12 seconds left. Change their world, Natalie, in 12, 10, 9, 8.
All right. Who wants to share? I saw a raised hand, but it moved so quickly.
Was that just someone adjusting their glasses, I guess, or, you know, brushing their hair back or whatever it might.
No, it's me. I was on mute. You know, in our group.
What's up, Kevin?
We got have a new member this year who is, going through the struggles that we all do. Just try how to, where to even begin and how to get, the ball rolling and Part of it is in, like I think you said, sort of a newer firm there, but there's just some, no one else really embraces what she's trying to do. And so I didn't get a chance to finish. What I was going to tell her is to, you know, maybe try to find that one key element that you all do agree on, not everything, but find that one spot and then try to start building off of that rather than trying to get agreement across the board. Find that one area and, you know, spike out from there with all of this great stuff. If that makes sense.
It's so important to build momentum on something. Just have a victory in something than trying to make progress on 13 different things all at once. So.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting because I think we all think that like momentum should happen immediately, but that's like the exact opposite from a scientific perspective of how momentum works. It builds like a little bit over time, like you have a train and you start to speed up and you speed up and you speed up and then you get so fast and going for so long that you can't stop, right? So it's about those incremental changes, building up, picking up pace, picking up speed, picking up the successes. And I think, Kevin, focusing on the wins is so critical because there are things that I call momentum killers, right? When I focus on, Adam and I were just having this conversation, not hitting certain metrics because I grew up in a, if you do good, if you perform, if you are perfect, you are loved and valued and, you know, get straight plus A's and then you're a good human being and we love you, that I have resistance to that. So when anytime I like don't hit the metrics, like I'm a little bit too hard on myself. I pick up the stick, I pick up the sword and I'm like, oh, I shouldn't be doing this anyway, right? So for me, I've had to focus on something different, the experience, the joy, the fun. And that's something that I measure in addition to the traditional metrics. Or when I'm working with clients, particularly working with like purpose or values-based firms, some of the things that we put in place are what I call impact metrics. What are the things that are like aligned with your purpose and your values? They're going to keep you motivated and going and growing, right? So kind of keeping your momentum is really critical.
Well, and that prompted me to think of my favorite quote from the movie Dodgeball, which if we have all seen that movie, there is a great quote that I think it's a great quote in the beginning of the movie where Vince Vaughn, who I think plays Peter, I can't think of his, Peter LaFleur, the owner of the gym, they're talking about goal setting and setting goals. And Peter's quote is, I found that if you have a goal that you might not reach it, but if you don't have one, then you are never disappointed. And I got to tell you, it feels phenomenal. To which the auditor that's interviewing him says, well, I guess that makes sense in a really sad way. So there is a time for goals and there is a time for, interestingly enough, doing what feels really good, assuming that the thing that we're doing really, that what we're doing feels really, assuming that the thing that we're doing that feels really good is actually good for us. Like me drinking a bottle of bourbon today, it might feel really good, but that's not healthy for us. That's not the good type of input or impact that we'd want to make. There are certain things that we can, to Natalie's point, have more of an impact measurement done that we're not quantifying our progress in. Incidentally, and ironically enough, sometimes doing that can yield some pretty incredible results.
Yeah. One of my metrics is, did I have fun today? Today is a yes, by the way. This is fun. I love you guys. Who else wants to share?
Any interesting goals that people want to share that they're putting down in their paper or success shifters? Maybe I shouldn't call them goals, just shifts that they're putting down in their paper that is something that is important to them qualitatively or quantitatively that they want to share? Lively bunch today, Natalie.
I know. Well, maybe it's because we keep positioning it as wants to share. Who's willing to step up?
There we go.
And have an opportunity to have the group hold them accountable to something really amazing going forward.
I was going to say, I'll jump in. It's not necessarily a particular shift that I wanted to share, but I was telling the group that I'm in, I've been a big digital guy my whole life. And just, Adam, what you said earlier, of I think it was Matt Jarvis that was talking about the if I were the purple underwear, pink jumpsuit, yeah. Whatever. That was kind of me with the success shifter when Stephanie was talking about it last month. I was like, you know what, let me just print this out. Let me forego the habit tracking app. And for me, it's been a game changer of just having it out on the kitchen counter every single day. And at the end of the day, I can't ignore it. It's right there in my face. And there's just a ton of satisfaction of taking the pen out and just marking the big X, yep. If I did it or not. And it's been a big shift from just tapping the little button on the app and then going, woohoo, that's over. And that's been a big one for me. So I encourage anybody else that's been a really big digital person, just give it a shot. There's a reason they keep saying, get out and do it.
That there's a question from Debbie, which I think is a really good one. How do you measure something like, did you have fun today? Sometimes when we set experiential or qualitative goals, they can be harder for our brains to measure, right? How do I measure if I had fun? How do I measure if I had a positive mindset today, right? So find something that works for you. For me, it's a hell yes or hell no. Right? It's either a yes or a no. If it's in between, I got to pick which one it falls into the camp. One of the other things I do use an app to track my moods and my emotions. I forget the name of it, but I'll pull it up and share it with you guys. It's actually, I think, Harvard or NYU. They're using it for research, but it allows you to track your moods and your emotions throughout the day, and it kind of gives you a score. Uses a system, which I think is funny because I learned it teaching it to my children, which is what color are you right now? Are you red, yellow, green, or blue? And for me, that has been really instrumental in managing the anxiety I have as an entrepreneur and a mother, and kind of understanding like how I'm actually showing up and how my thoughts are impacting my feelings, which are impacting my actions. So for me, that emotional awareness has become really critical in creating shifts. So much of my roadblocks are not like process or system oriented. I can tell you how to build all of the processes that we teach you about. And yet I'm a human too. And there are ones that I struggle with in my business that I'm working to create improvements in. And those are the ones that I spend a lot of time talking to my coach about. And she's not a business coach. She's a mindset coach. That's really all that we talk about, is what are the things that I'm thinking, the feelings, how is that stopping me from getting where I'm going? So those are some of the ways that I track those more qualitative metrics. But just pick something and then do it consistently. That's the answer, right? I have a lot of advisors when we talk about KPIs, they're like, what do I put for my salary? Because, well, I'm an LLC and I'm a disregarded entity, so I pass through all my compensation. I'm like, great, let's pick how you want to measure it and then measure it consistently going forward. My recommendation on that is, if you're building out KPIs, is set a salary for yourself, even if you don't take it from like a tax and accounting perspective, like, hey, I'm running my numbers, an equivalent to replace me in this organization would cost X. And then when I'm running my Excel spreadsheet metrics, hey, I can put those numbers in and I can actually see how that drops or changes the bottom line. The great thing about that is I also know what it takes to replace me in the future. And that came about, I used to do some valuation work when I was at AssetMark. And if you're going to sell your firm, guess what? They're going to normalize your P&L and take out all your personal expenses. And they're going to say, hey, this is what it would cost to replace you in the organization. It's also a pay yourself first mentality, I think, particularly for those of you who are starting out early or newer advisors, right? You sort of that take what's left over mentality. There's a big shift between taking what's left over and valuing your worth and your role in the business. And even if you're not kind of measuring it, you know, tactically speaking with your tax accountant, putting it on the metrics and saying, hey, here's what I would like to pay myself this year. What do my numbers actually look like? If I give myself a raise from $125,000 to $165,000, because that's what a senior wealth advisor is worth, and darn well that's what I should be paid. And then it's going to tell you, hey, what are the shifts that I need to make to get there? Hey, to do that, I need to make X more in revenue. Great. Now, what do I need to go do to go make that happen?
Natalie, I was going to touch on that. And then what Adam was asking, one of the things that we talked about in our group, which it was a good reminder, is that how do you come up with your niche? And it comes into the qualitative metrics, because one of my top things that I determine of my niche is, do I get excited when somebody calls the phone? Do I want to answer their question because it's interesting? It's going to challenge me. And do I like the person? My largest client, I got rid of last year. It was incredibly painful, but having her call, and that was a metric for me to measure. Do I just immediately cringe, get annoyed, and spend a half hour just venting as soon as I hang up the phone with her and just having to do this because I just like, ugh, was so aggravated? That was a complete waste of my time because it was such a snowball, because it just destroyed my energy. And I just had to look at it and go, that makes no sense. She is keeping me from getting good revenue. I don't care how much she's making. She doesn't appreciate the value. She doesn't, all the metrics that we look at. And as painful as it was to step back from that client, I guess I appreciate Limitless in that you guys showed me, as Stephanie says, I was not going to get eaten by a tiger. I'm still here, even though I lost $100,000 of revenue. She was a big client. But I'm so much happier now that she's gone. Now, are we having to go back and make up that revenue? But by seeing, like, Adam, you go and niche and become very successful by niching. She not only didn't fit in my niche from she's not an executive anymore, but I just didn't like her as a person. I think that sounds horrible. And so I'm excited now by doing all the things that Limitless is teaching, that I'm going to not only replace that revenue, I'm going to replace it with people that value my work, that appreciate me as a person, and that I'm going to get excited to pick up the phone and want to work with. But it was great to have the example of, like, Adam, when you did that, you had some bumpy roads, just like I went through, but you made it to the other side. And here's some of the great tools and tips and tricks that made you be able to get through. And I loved having that first year of Limitless just being a sponge. And then now we're actually implementing. So it's funny when, like, Kenneth asked the question, well, how did you pick your niche? And I was able to just right off the bat, I like them, they're interesting, and they pay me. And I couldn't have done that in the first year of Limitless.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. That's, congratulations. That's a big number, 100 grand.
It was a very painful number.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think here's the interesting piece. If you're showing up and expecting nothing to be effort, or that this isn't going to test you, that's why we're talking about creating and putting accountability systems in place, because you are going to meet resistance. There are going to be things that you know you need to do, but you don't necessarily want to do, right? I know I need to let go of a $100,000 client who side rails my day, makes me feel bad, loses all of the momentum and is really draining me of energy and purpose, right? But do I want to let go of $100,000 in revenue? Probably not, right? You probably don't want to do that. But, right, having that, right, being able to shift that mindset from scarcity, I'm losing $100,000 in revenue, to abundance. Hey, I'm creating space and energy and time to be able to reach my goals. And while this thing that I'm choosing to do is hard, it's going to help the boat row faster. It's going to get me where I want to go faster. And so that's really why the accountability mechanisms are so important, because you're going to be faced, the more successful you are, the more you're going to be faced with things that I call testing your mettle, right? Having to say no, setting boundaries, choosing only to work with a certain kind of client because it's going to get you where you want to go faster, and because you, quite frankly, you enjoy doing it, right? Those are all the things. But if you don't have a structure in place to support you, you're just less likely to show up and set boundaries and say no and do all of the things that we know are going to get us where we want to go. Any other questions as we wrap up? We got time probably for about one more, I think, Adam. This is your last chance.
I have a question. So when you think about, you know, close percentage, when you're tracking the close percentage, are you tracking close percentage, you know, like closings as a percentage of the, you know, all the people that book a call with you, or are you tracking that as a percentage of, you know, people who are the right fit, who potentially would want an advisor like you? Is it that close of a fit? Because I get so many random like Calendly prospect calls, yep, from people who are not even the right fit for me. And I know they're not going to turn into clients. So, yeah.
Yep. So I'll read and I'll read the response, and I just hit enter on and I'll put some context behind that. So this is going, the original question is, what were the three KPIs that are most important to me that we measure, that if I only had to pick three, like I would measure those? It's revenue per client, or average revenue per client, number of free days that I take, or off days, you know, what are my out of office days? And then what is my close ratio, which is the number of onboarding calls. So the only way that you can do an onboarding call with our firm is you've signed the financial plan engagement and we've got a check from you. Period, full stop. Zero client service, zero, well, let's begin the onboarding process and we'll wait until, nope, been there, done that, lost my t-shirt a couple times. So by measuring in our scheduling software, we can pull those reports and say, okay, how many onboarding calls have we scheduled? We call it a gold meeting, get organized and learn. So that's your first meeting with us as a client. How many of those have we scheduled? How many triage calls have I had? A triage call, as we'll talk about more in the, as we get into sessions, the Say Yes prospect process and things like that. That is the first call that essentially we have as human beings with our prospects. So that triage call that I have is a condensed version of the Say Yes prospect process. Again, we'll get into that. We spent a lot of time and energy retooling the website to put language on the website that is that makes it abundantly clear to someone that is going to schedule who we do our best work with and how we qualitatively and quantitatively measure that. So we do that on the website. And then when they book the triage call, we created an intake form that in order to book the call, you have to answer these questions. And the questions only give options that are in alignment with our ideal prospects. So if you select no to any of those, or you don't answer them because they don't fit, that has self-selected out. So the number of triage calls that we did from 2022 to 20, or from 2021 to 2022, I don't remember the exact number, but I believe we cut them down by at least a third, maybe close to 40%. And yet our new client numbers stayed the same because I was having that exact issue. I'll never forget the exact, there was a week in February, because I surge, quote unquote, surge my prospecting calls as well. And I think like 1 week I had 17 triage calls that were on the books. And I go into that week and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. I mean, it's been like manna from heaven in new clients coming down. Like, holy smokes, this is amazing. And then after that, I'm like, God, what a colossal waste of time, because they were so many non-fit calls. And that was the tipping point to realize, all right, let's quit masking the symptom. Let's cure the disease. Let's go back to the drawing board, retool the website and do that. And that has worked, interestingly, very, very well on avoiding, like, I'm not going to say we're batting 1,000. There are some people that get through that, dare I say, intentionally answer wrong just to get on my calendar. Part of the reason we also do that, or we've also fixed that, Kathy does, after within 24 hours after booking a call, Kathy makes an outbound call to connect with that person, just kind of fish for a little bit more information. If she gets some ideas that it might not be the best fit for us, she puts those notes into CRM so that I can kind of go into that conversation somewhat prepared that this might only be a 15-minute call instead of the full 45 minutes. But a long answer to your question, to put some context around it, the majority, if not all of the triage calls that I have are already with ideal clients or prospects, excuse me.
Yeah. So if you're not yet at that level where the prospects that you have are coming in are ideal, what Adam is talking about is, yes, measure whether or not a prospect who comes through your pipeline is an ideal fit. Because what that's going to tell you is if you keep getting prospects who aren't ideal fit, it's data and information that tells the story. The story is, I'm not doing a great job telling the world who I am and what I do and who I do it for in a way that has them going, oh, that person is for me or isn't for me. So if you aren't already, you know, your brand isn't out there in the way that Adam's is, it can help you get a sense of like, hey, do I need to do a website or a brand update some point in the future, right? It's all really valuable data. And for those of us who have a bit more values oriented or not like a profession oriented niche, like I work with purpose-based advisors, right? People who are driven and motivated to do good work in the world, who are human beings and want to make our industry a better place. Not exactly the easiest thing to measure or share with someone, right? So I still track both, right? And sometimes those what I call old school advisors sneak through. I want to make a whole bunch of money. But hey, one of the questions I ask in the interview process is, tell me about how you pay your team, right? Hey, if I have someone who's been on my team for 10 years and they're still making what an admin makes, it's a pretty good indication for me that there's not a good fit. Or, hey, let me dig into that a little bit deeper. So tracking those things, I think, are really critical. The better that you get at it, the more focused you get, you can start to kind of shift the metrics a bit. But absolutely, don't just track anyone who comes through the door, track whether or not they were the right person coming through the door. And then you can start to improve your closing ratio, right? Your closing ratio should go up for ideal prospects. It should go down for non-ideal prospects. In fact, it should be zero.
All right. What'd you say should be zero, Natalie? Sorry, I was messaging chat.
Your closing ratio zero, like, for non-ideal prospects.
Oh, yeah.
All right. With that, I think we're going to call it a wrap. If you guys have questions, if you want to share your successes, if you need someone to be accountability partner for you, check out Tribe, go in, say, hey, I'm going to be doing this, right? We're here to support you. Everyone in this room is here to support you. Good luck. Go forth and conquer.